Discovery's four computers now have primary control of critical vehicle functions.
3, 2, 1, 0, 0, 0.
Hello, world, and welcome to the Gadget Cast. My name is Gregory McFadden, joined always with my co-host, Travis M.C.P.
Space travel.
What's going on, everybody? Hope everyone's having a great week. Gadget Cast is back, baby. I should have actually streamed this on my channel since I haven't done content in weeks. I guess we can talk about that as well. How are you, Gregory?
Well, I'm just going to say I'm doing good. I don't know. I feel like I've had... Listen, I don't want to lie. I'm going to tell the truth to GadgetCast. I've had like a pretty off week this entire week. I feel like everything, I've just, you know, not like anything major too, very first world kind of problems that I won't bother people with real problems with, but I've been a little down this week. So, you know, same. I always look forward to GadgetCast. Maybe I'll be all cheered up by the end of this show. But I actually had a lot of fun making a certain video last night and blowing off making a real video. maybe I'll come to regret that, but I made a video about UFOs. It's on my Twitter. Go check it out. I think it's the best video I've ever made. You saw that video, right?
Yeah, I definitely showed how much time you have on your hands, which is really great. I will say that, yeah, this week was kind of tough for me too. I had my moments and stuff, but you know, listen, it's real life out here, ladies and gentlemen. It's real life. By the way, in Seattle here where I live, we are in the middle of record temperatures, well over 100 degrees yesterday, today, and allegedly through the next couple of days. They're saying we're going to break records, like, period, end of story. So it is very hot out here. It's a little bit crazy. Now, a lot of people don't have air conditionings where I live because, by and large, the Seattle area is mild in weather, which is one of the reasons I love living here. However, I did buy an air conditioning for my house, and thank goodness I did, because let me tell you something. It is hot out there. And I know you being on the East Coast, and I'm from the East Coast myself, so I know what real hot weather is like. You know when you open up the door with humidity and you feel the air on your skin? Mm-hmm. It's terrible, right? Well, I've lived here for too long. Many years, and I don't think I've ever felt that until today. I mean, since I left Delaware to here. So it is crazy go nuts, man. Crazy go nuts.
That is crazy, because I thought the benefits of living in that area was that you didn't have to deal with that kind of like humidity and heat anymore. And yeah, like on the East Coast, like, yeah, if I go walk outside right now, you get hit by it and you're just like, oh no, and like, ugh, you feel awful. I think we're supposed to get that heat wave you're talking about like this week. Like it's supposed to come hit us too. And it's like, yeah, the temperatures are going to be like bad. They got like heat advisory warnings. I'm just hoping, you know, the electricity stays on. I can keep my AC on, stay inside the home and survive this. But yeah, it's crazy that it's happening in Washington. It should not be happening there.
Yeah, no, this is one of the places it's not supposed to happen. I think in Oregon, down to Oregon as well. Like, it's the entire Pacific Northwest. It's crazy go nuts, man. It is crazy. But I think that when you're you know, not used to it, it's worse than when you are, which means, you know, you know, electrical services are going to be really overutilized. People who are not used to high hot weather, you know, may end up getting hospitalized. Unfortunately, I'm talking about like the elderly and stuff. Like, it's just, it's an interesting situation, I'll tell you.
That's the you know, living on the East Coast, you get every season, so you don't get used to any temperature for too long.
No, I'm kidding. If you don't like the weather, just wait 5 minutes.
Absolutely. Oh man. Yeah, so let's talk about tech. This is a tech podcast, you know. I'm sure people probably would like to hear about our personal lives all day long. They probably would. They'd probably be the better show. But, you know, we should lead with this story because it's kind of funny. We're going to talk about Windows 11. There's actually, I think most of the show will probably be taken up by Windows 11. But I don't know if you saw, like, the latest front page tech where John Prosser's kind of poking fun at, like, the tech news drought that he's been in. And then just before we went on this show, Mark Gurman came out and said no new Apple events or no new Apple products for a while, for like this summer. So basically, like, the next time we'll probably get products is at like the iPhone event. So, you know, a lot of people were predicting like maybe we'd get like these M1X MacBook Pro sometime in the summer, or maybe like a press release. Well, like, with John Prosser coming out and Mark Gurman coming out, it's like pretty much like, all right, you know, we're in for summer. It's a wait now.
Yeah. So. I think the thing is this, and so goes the tech news cycle when Apple is not doing anything. This is the perfect opportunity for Samsung to bring out their foldables and to do something. Cause I think we talked about, you know, in the last couple of weeks, that they seemingly have disappeared. This is a great opportunity for them and some other manufacturers to kind of come in and steal the spotlight. If, you know, Apple isn't going to do it, they, you know, Apple's kind of dominated the first half of this year. And even the last half of, or last quarter or so of last year, it's a great opportunity for them to jump out into the spotlight. Microsoft's doing it with Xbox and Windows. There's a lot of opportunity here for kind of for people to, when they have nothing else to kind of read or watch, to see something from a manufacturer like, again, like Samsung, we haven't heard from really since January, February-ish, which seems like forever ago.
It is strange you bring up Samsung. I was just reading the other day, you know, we're expecting maybe the new Flip and the new Fold. I've seen like leaks already of them, like full blown. The Fold 2 looks pretty much the same. Maybe we'll get like the S Pen support, which is that actually sounds really cool on like a foldable phone. Yeah. And then the Flip looked a little bit revised, but same kind of deal. But you're right. You know, it feels strange. Like Samsung feels, and you know, listen, if you're a Samsung fan, I'm not saying anything bad about Samsung, but it does feel like they have been out of this tech news cycle for like a very long time, to a point where I don't remember this in years past. I always remember like stories coming up about Samsung, whether it was the latest release of whatever phones they were doing, or just like a bunch of leaks like around their products about like what to expect from the future. And like, yeah, there has been a literal drought. We know like the new announcements are probably going to come up like soonish. But before that, like, you know, all this stuff we've been talking about, WWDC, M1X Max, all like the Apple news cycle, everything else, Samsung has kind of fallen off the radar here, to a point that, I don't know, I just don't remember it ever being this way. I always remember it kind of being like, it's Apple's turn. Now it's Samsung's turn. Now it's Microsoft's turn. Now it's Apple's turn. Now it's Samsung. Like, kind of like that. And this year, not at all.
Well, and a lot of it has to do with the fact that there's it's very likely we won't see a Galaxy Note at the end of this year. At least that's been what's been said for a while. So a lot of the leaks surrounding the Note is usually what's filling up this time period. And then the foldables come out. And like, so that sort of thing happens. So we are seeing some leaks about the foldables, which are kind of exciting. I'm looking forward to seeing that. But, you know, when we talk about the news cycle kind of being open like that, we also talk about what's going on in like tech YouTube. And, you know, for our audio listeners, I'm sure that they watch tech YouTube as well. At least some of them do, I'm sure. But it's kind of crazy. Like, I personally have not uploaded a video for 3 weeks. It's not completely related to the news, but and I know that you know, you've had some videos out that you wish would do better. And when we look around kind of the landscape, the videos that are going out by and large are still kind of holding on to the M1 kind of news cycle, which is, to me, feels old and played out at this point. So it's weird that, and it's sad. Sometimes I think, man, is tech YouTube really like, is it over? I mean, obviously not. There's still lots of tech to come and interest to come, but it feels very different this year than previous years. Like, because there's no back and forth, it almost feels, I don't want to say not dead, but like not alive.
Yeah. I don't know about that. I feel like the months leading up to now, where it does feel kind of dead, I felt like was very exciting. So I just feel like we're coming off the period of something that was very exciting in the tech space, all this M1 stuff and how other companies would react to it, to this just like very boring period. And I personally felt like the beginning or the end of last year into the beginning of this year was one of the most exciting moments in like tech coverage that I could remember in like the past 5 years, like almost to like a really hyped up point. And I just think we're coming off, like you said, like, okay, M1, it's kind of old news at this point, but like that coming into this year was super exciting for me. And now we're just kind of waiting for the next thing to come out, and it's taking quite a while. And yeah, it does kind of get a little bit like, all right, like, can tech get any better than this? I don't know. Maybe this is the end. But, you know, it's funny you bring that up, because we're going to talk about Windows in just a second. I do feel like a lot of the excitement from smartphones is gone. So I don't know if necessarily the excitement around all of tech is gone. Like, gaming's very hot right now. Right. You see the PlayStation 5, Xbox, Game Pass. I feel like I read a story every day about one of those two things. The new Switch coming out. But in the tech space that we particularly cover, I feel like phones are very boring. The updates have been pretty iterative, like, the past 2 years, right? Like, there's no reason to go out and upgrade to an iPhone 12 if you have an iPhone 11. And you go back a few years, and it was like you're getting an iPhone 5 to an iPhone, you know, 6. And it's like, oh, my God, look at these amazing upgrades. Mm-hmm. And I feel like a lot of the excitement, and you correct me if I'm wrong here, and strangely enough, I feel like a lot of the excitement is back in the desktop and laptop space.
Yeah, yeah, I do agree with that, and which is interesting because I can't remember last time I was even mildly interested in that. So it does feel like not a phoenix rising, but certainly a resurgence in that because of things like M1, and then of course the GPU stuff on the the Windows side of things, and lots of interesting things in that. You're right. I think I'm more talking about mobile tech and stuff, which, you know, is what I primarily do, although trying to do a little bit more of stuff other than just phones. But if you look at it from the phone side of things, what we have left really are the foldables from Samsung, which I'm kind of excited about, various budget phones, I'm sure, a possible Pixel, and then the iPhone 12S, which we should talk about real quick, just briefly, that we don't believe that it's the iPhone 13 anymore. It's the iPhone 12S, right? So that's what they're saying. Yeah, we're now going to start calling it the iPhone 12S. And that being the case, I don't think it's going to be unless S years are never all that exciting. They're usually iterative of the year previous. And, you know, there'll be a couple of cool things this thing will do, but I don't think I'm going to be excited about it. It's going to be hard for me to spend the money on it. I think I'm going to have to because I have the channel, but it's going to be hard to push me. So I'm not really excited much about iPhone mobile stuff for the rest of the year, unless that, if we're going to say mobile and we say iPad mini, if we put that in, okay, now I'm excited about that. But other than that.
Yeah. But that almost falls into laptop space.
It really
kind
of does. Yeah.
The phone space is very boring in right now. You know, you say that about the iPhone 12S, but I do think a lot of people will be excited when it finally comes out just for 120 hertz. I know it kind of sounds bad to say, like, okay, Android phones have had this for like 2 years now. But, you know, when Apple does it, I think people will be like, all right, 120 hertz. There's still a couple of other rumors. We don't know how, like, the phone will pan out. Like, I've seen rumors saying it will get Touch ID. I've seen rumors saying it won't get Touch ID again. So I think if Apple makes, you know, it's not going to be revolutionary. It's going to be the same design, but it could end up being an interesting phone if they play their cards right. I also heard like bigger batteries for this year, like little improvements like that can go a long way to the point where even if the features aren't that revolutionary or exciting, the whole package, you know, is more than the sum of its parts. So we'll see with the iPhone stuff. But again, nothing mind blowing, right? Like all these advancements we're talking about.
So this is the year that Samsung could potentially bring me back into the fold. The fold. Because of the fold, the folding phone. So we'll see what happens there, especially with pricing. Because it's kind of perhaps a slower year on the iPhone side of things, could be bring, but you know, once you're in the ecosystem, it is very difficult to get out of here. I'm going to talk a little bit about that in my upcoming video, but I've actually talked about it in another video. Like, once you're in, it's very hard to get out. And Apple does that on purpose. And listen, rightfully so. That's what they're all about. They get you in, they feed you a little cookie, like the cookie, and then they bring you in for a little bit more. And then now you're stuck. You got diabetes and you can't move, which is kind of what like being stuck in the Apple ecosystem is. Like, too big to move. Now you're on 1,000-pound life on TLC. And that's how it happened. I don't know. Starts somewhere and it ends there. But yeah, I mean, so there is some excitement. Like I half tempted, I saw Viper did a video. He's doing some videos on like Xbox stuff now. And I love Xbox, as you know. And I'm half tempted to just throw something up. But then I realized, like, what if those take off? The problem with like gaming content, which I love, is that I'm not an expert enough about, like, I mean, I'm paying attention to what's going on gaming-wise and stuff, and I actually do know quite a bit. But I don't think I could do a gaming channel. And I know that if a lot of people came over from, you know, for a couple, it would be difficult for,
I think you could.
I'd have to spend so much time relearning stuff though. That's the problem.
I think the stuff you'd have to relearn would take a lot shorter than you think. This is my problem too. Cause I used to be like more into gaming than I am into what I'm doing now. And then I like completely switched. I got more into like the, you know, other tech side of things, but I'm kind of coming back around into gaming. Like this console generation, I don't know. There's something about it that, I don't know. I like it a lot. And I kind of, I'm thinking the same thing. And I think I'm going to start a separate channel, which I have to get off my butt and do. But I think if I put, now I'm not saying like gameplay, like that would be a mistake. Like, oh, I can't do gameplay. Right, like that would just be a mistake for the algorithm. But if I did like a PlayStation 5 review on the channel, I think it would take a little bit of research, a little bit more research than I would usually have to do. Mm-hmm. But I it's the same kind of stuff, right? And ultimately, I think that you, even now not researching the stuff, probably know more than 99% of the people that are going to watch the video. And you'll get like five snooty comments going, excuse me, you didn't consider this.
I have a feeling that it would be a lot more in the gaming. Yeah, I think it'd be pretty crazy. And we think that tech is pretty toxic, but gaming, I think, is the granddaddy of toxic.
Whole level,
Between that and politics, I don't know what would be, you know, worse. But yeah, you never know. I mean, like, I like the idea. I've seen Andrew Edwards do some of his bigger videos he talked about it when he was on a couple weeks ago, which, by the way, we should probably mention if you missed it. I think this coming up week is when the recorded episode that Greg and I were on of Gear Live. This is the first time Greg and I have ever been on another podcast together. And that was pretty cool with John Rettinger and Andrew Edwards. That will be available this week, I think.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Should be available this week. I think tomorrow. I think it goes up the same day, if I'm not mistaken. So you'll
I'm half tempted to get the audio file from him and then just put it on our podcast feed later in the week, just because cutting out his sponsored, you know, clips and stuff, obviously, because really it was in a weird way a GadgetCast episode 2.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But
without the GadgetCast.
I feel like we got to push our audience to them, you know, like, I don't know. This could be wrong. So I feel like we got to, you know, we're not going to do that. You got to go check it out on Gear Live. Definitely do it. I'll include it in the show notes for sure. Once it goes up, I'll edit the show notes and check back there and you'll find the Gear Live episode with me and Travis, John Rettinger and Andrew Edwards. A lot of heavy hitters on that. Excluding me and Travis, so go ahead and listen to that. No, that was a lot of fun though. That was a lot of fun recording that. Had a blast. Thanks to both of them for inviting both of us on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, game. We talked a lot of gaming too.
We talked a lot of gaming, like more than I thought we would, and it's fun. So we should both do something with gaming content, whether that's a second channel or on the main channel. I'm serious. I think we should get into it because, I mean, I don't know if we want to bore the GadgetCast audience with this, but I really, you know, I'm looking at the patterns of tech and I think, you know, we as content creators have to constantly evolve. And I feel like the phone mobile space of things is going to just keep getting even less exciting as we go on. And I think eventually you might have to go out and branch into something a little bit different.
In fairness, Board at Work does a lot of gaming stuff on his channel, and that does particularly well. Of course, he does mobile stuff as well. So, I mean, there is obviously crossover between the people who, you know, view our content and people that are gamers as well. I don't know how much of a crossover there is with my particular community. But, I mean, it would be something I would be interested in. And certainly for the podcast, I think we can get away with it a lot here on the podcast because while we have definitely focused a lot on Apple stuff, the reality is we do talk a little bit about everything. One of our first episodes, I think, was about Microsoft. So
our first episode was all about like Microsoft stuff.
Yeah. So, I mean, the podcast itself, we can do whatever the heck we want, which is a nice way to get, because I like all types of tech. So it's really, that's one of the things I love about GadgetCast. We come here and talk about the other things that, you know, algorithmically, when we try to put them up on YouTube, maybe won't perform as well. And, you know, I wouldn't mind, you know, talking a little bit about that because, you know, YouTube's a difficult thing. Greg and I were talking, you know, before the show about how YouTube is like a blessing and a curse. In a weird way, it's kind of like being in a bad relationship. It's kind of like, you know, oh, I'm with this person and I feel I feel something for them, but they keep calling me bad names like every week. And but I hate them, but I love them because every once in a while they tell me how good I am. But for the most part, they tell me I'm terrible. So that's kind of like what being a YouTuber is, especially when you're trying to make a living on it or trying to grow on it.
Yeah, it is. It's the coolest thing I've ever done, and I enjoy it a lot. It also might be one of the most stressful and most annoying and drives me crazy things that I've ever done. So it's a really weird balance of like, I love doing YouTube. I don't think I trade it for anything else. But at the same time, I think there's just a lot of like pressure because it's like, man, it's like any other like job or thing you do in life, you're usually doing it with other people. And for the most, I mean, Travis helps me out a lot. We talk like a lot of strategy and stuff like that. But like really, for the most part, at the end of the day, you're developing all these concepts for videos. You're doing all the footage mostly by yourself, especially if you're smaller like us. And everything is on you. And it is a lot of pressure to the point of where like a video may not perform well, even if you did everything right or whatever preconceived notion of what you think YouTube wants is right. And it just weighs on you, even if like really like what impact did you have on that video surfacing to the people? Because like to go into the weeds a little bit, one of the ways your videos get views is what YouTube calls impressions. That's how much they show it to people. And it's funny, I just did that parody UFO video I was talking about earlier in the show. I actually put that up on my personal YouTube channel, like not the Greg's Gadgets YouTube channel, on just my YouTube channel. I want to see like, this is funny. Like if someone just came across this, I think maybe it'd be a laugh. But it just teaches me like, Travis, you know how many impressions that video got on like my personal channel with no subscribers?
No.
44 impressions. Like, yeah. You know what I mean? Like I made a thumbnail for it. Like I did everything right, I think, for that kind of video to like surface in the YouTube algorithm. And it only got seen impression wise by like 44 different people, not even clicks on the video. Just impressions were like 44. Mm. So, you know, what else could I control on that? If I did that on my channel, I'd get at least like 100,000 impressions, even if it had nothing to do with tech, just because of where my channel is in the algorithm. So it is kind of frustrating, like especially if you're like a new channel doing this stuff for the first time.
Yeah, I've been spending a lot of time watching Twitch streamers lately, and that's a whole different ball of wax. Plus, their money, the way they make money, is different in a lot of ways. It's interesting because I see like the smaller streamers kind of, you know, there's recommended channels, and that's kind of how recommendation engine works on YouTube, where they're like there's recommended videos and stuff, but. It seems to me I'll watch, you know, some streamers that are kind of, quote, smaller, and I wonder how they grow, because the nice thing about YouTube is it's the second largest search engine on the internet. So there is a chance of you being randomly discovered. On something like Twitch, it's not as much. To my knowledge, they don't really have like an algorithm, so to speak, certainly not. Not to the degree that YouTube does. So you think you have all of this leverage, especially if you spent any amount of time creating a channel, and the problem is you get to a point where you think you've succeeded and you're like, okay, I should have a certain amount of success now every time I put a video out, and it just doesn't happen. Sometimes you put a video out and quote, no one sees it. Now that's a relative term, and from the, you know, from a creator perspective, that's where you hear about burnout, because just as Greg was saying, like you're putting in a lot of this time and effort and you think people are going to want to watch this video, and what makes it sometimes worse is when people say, oh, I love this video a lot, it was great, and it's not getting the impressions, which again are the amount of times that the thumbnail is shown to someone. So you feel like this invisible enemy is holding you back, but because you can't see or talk to that invisible enemy, you start to feel bad about yourself. And that's where a lot of you know, sometimes you'll see YouTubers talking about I quit and this, that, and the other. That's it. It's a really weird thing, because I remember as a viewer before I started doing YouTube myself, I was like, what are these people talking about? You just put out a video and people should watch it. You have 20,000 subscribers, 50,000 subscribers, it should work great. That's not the way it works. That's why you'll see a lot of channels with, you know, a tremendous amount of subscribers and not many views, because they don't correlate at all. And that's the same thing on Twitch, where you can have a bunch of followers, but then there's a separate thing called subscribers. Unlike YouTube, On Twitch, subscribers are a pay thing. It's a pay. So if someone has 10,000 subscribers, they might actually have like 300,000 followers, which is separate. It's weird. On YouTube, we have what's called memberships, which is they put in the last year and change, which is similar-ish. But the reason why in some ways Twitch is better is because it's streaming only. You go out there and you're streaming for maybe 8 to 10 hours, which is a long day, but it's just like work, right? But you turn off that camera, you're done. YouTubers, some of us may record for about the same amount of time, but then we've got to edit it and then do thumbnails and then, do all these other things that take additional time. And if it's a sponsored video where you're hopefully trying to get paid for it and it doesn't perform, now you've got to do it all over again. And you're promising something you have no control over. It's just a weird... Listen, I am super happy to be a creator for a living. It's incredible, amazing. Like, there's nothing like it. But there is nothing like it. And the pressure behind it is crazy.
Yeah. I think you nailed it right on the head when you said, like, if you're a viewer of this stuff and you've, like, never tried doing it, I don't think even listening to us talk about it, you'll never understand it. Because I was the same way before I started doing my own stuff on YouTube. I would watch a lot of my favorite creators talk about burnout or talk about how they're not getting the views. And I had the same thing. Just make a video. Stop complaining. Like, what are you talking about? And it's like, yeah, it's like you will never understand it until you start doing it and it'll click in your head. So if you're listening to this and you're like, why are these two guys complaining? They got it easy. Like, I totally get it because I was in that spot before. But like the minute you like try and do it, I think you'll quickly realize like the spot we're in and go, oh, that's what they were talking about. Yeah. There is a lot of pressure on this stuff. And like even going to like sponsors and stuff like that. Like, sometimes like you're like doing great on YouTube and it's like, you're getting like 100,000 view video here, 100,000 view video there. And like some like sponsor comes up, like a brand you've always wanted to work with. And you're like, oh, we'd love to sponsor a video on your channel. And you can put out that next video and it can just tank. Like, yep. It's like you got 10,000 views and it really does stink sometimes because you work with a sponsor that you really love. And then you almost like feel bad, like in like this weird business relationship that you really just don't have that much control over. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden you feel like they're looking at you like, how could you do this to us? Like we spent money on you. Like you feel awful and you do feel awful. Yeah. And it's kind of like, I don't even know if like I could explain it to them. It's like, I tried my hardest. This was the job you paid me for. I get it. If it's like particularly like a bad video, like maybe I will like out of the kindness of my heart be like, hey, you know what? Let me give you a free one just because I like you as like a company. I don't mind recommending your product at all. But like you'll feel bad. Like, yeah, like, wow. Like they believed in you and it feels like you're letting them down. But in a way, it's like you just did what you were always doing and what they hired you to do. And they watched your content and they said they liked it and everything. Right. So it's kind of like,
Yeah, it is a strange thing to be in a situation where people are coming to you. And, if you're doing your job right, are coming to you for you. But are they really, really what they are coming to you for is your audience. So for the people that are listening to this show or watching on live stream on YouTube, they're really coming to you, but through us. And, for me, whenever I'm doing, any type of sponsored content, which I don't do a lot of, I do try to keep in mind my viewership and try to get products or things that I think people would be interested in. I say no tremendously more than I say yes.
Oh yeah.
And the reality is I try to guard that relationship with the viewership that I have because it's really important to me. I worked hard to get it and I feel like I don't want to mess it up for a quick buck. So there's a lot of like variables to the way YouTube works and the way that creators work. And, if you really value your community, how you operate. And for like GadgetCast, for example, some of my favorite community members in all of my communities, I have a couple of different communities that I deal with, my own, this vidIQ. This is one of my favorite ones because I feel like, it's such a vibe over here. Like it's such a cool vibe and people are really behind what we do and we just have fun and we can talk about something like this, which would not be something I would generally talk about on my main channel or anything like that. So, the people that hang with us here on GadgetCast are definitely one of my favorite communities. And we'll definitely, you'll also notice we don't really do sponsored stuff here. If we ever do, we think it's going to be a match for what you guys want. And that's pretty much the only reason we're going to do it.
yeah, like the GadgetCast community, I feel like, I could like throw in like a joke in like one of my main channel videos, and I feel like one person in the audience would like get it. And then like if I do it on like GadgetCast, like everyone's in on the joke with me, yeah. And they get it. Like if people on GadgetCast watch that UFO video, they get it. They know yeah. me. They're like, oh, I get it. I get what he's doing here. Yep. Meanwhile, I got like my regular Twitter followers like coming in and they're like, stick to tech, Greg. And I'm just like, did you not realize this is like a joke? And people are like, I'm like, this is a clear joke, guys. Like, it is not serious. Like, I don't know what you are expecting, but yeah.
I actually liked it. I'll be honest, I liked it.
I thought it was the best video I've done in a long time.
It was good.
I was just sitting. I got like this shot that was like pitch black. I'm like, this looks like a conspiracy theory video. Oh, you know what? I'm just going to throw up like a 2-minute thing. And then I just went off the rails. And I think you should go watch that video on Twitter or my personal YouTube channel, which is just my name, if you can find it.
Is that what, if you can find Greg?
Gregory McFadden. I have 5 subscribers now. I had 0. So
wow. Look at that.
Oh, yeah.
That silver play button's right around the corner.
I'm getting it. But yeah, it's all a struggle. But again, I do enjoy it. I wouldn't do it if I didn't enjoy it ultimately.
Yeah.
But I know it looks like, oh, this super easy, cushy thing. How can these guys like, it's hard. So I think like at the end of the day, like if you have a good community, it always kind of brings you back to like, ooh, yeah, you know what? Like even if I'm feeling down, I know like if I go post a video, like ultimately, there are people in the community that really do appreciate it. And that does always lift my spirits. Like,
yeah,
I see the same people in my comment section saying like, you know what? I love this video. This helped me out. Or, you know, I disagreed with this, Greg, but I really like how you presented it or something like all that stuff. Like I always get like cheered up when I see that. So I like my
community. It'll be interesting because I've taken off the most amount of time since I started my YouTube channel. I've never taken this much time off consecutively. So I'll be returning, I believe, this week. And I'm kind of curious, like I haven't even shot the video yet. I was supposed to do it already. I have not done it. I'm hoping to do it after the podcast. And that's one of the things where sitting back in front of a camera for the first time in weeks and trying to get back into the vibe and into the, I don't know, back into everything is going to be weird. And then hoping that it, and the thing is, of course, we were talking about right now, like views are down, generally speaking, in tech YouTube for a lot of people, knowing that I'm coming back at, is not at a not a good time.
Coming back in the dry period, you're gonna be like you're even if you like get yourself like psyched up, you're ultimately like bracing for disappointment.
Yeah, exactly. It's gonna be nuts. Gonna be real nuts. Anyway, I actually see someone saying something in the chat. It's actually a good question. Does Windows 11 work on the Intel MacBook Pro and MacBook Air 2020? But that's not even really the question because you can use Parallels even on M1. You know, MacBooks and stuff. And obviously, you can use Windows 10 on those. Now, Windows 11, on the other hand, I don't know how much of a change things like Parallels and Boot Camp for Intel's versions of MacBooks are going to need to change. I don't know. Is that generally a thing when they go between operating systems for those? Is it? How does that work?
What do you mean?
In other words, so they had to update Parallels for Windows 10 for like M1. Yeah. Will they have to update it again for Windows 11 or does that even matter?
I think so.
Really? Because
it's a new operating system. I imagine Parallels would have to get a virtualization of it, but I imagine Parallels will be pretty quick with that. Like I imagine they'll get the virtualization up. It's just virtualization, so I don't think there'd be any issue with that. I was reading some stories and let's talk about tech now. Let's get into Microsoft.
Real quick, I want to address something I see in chat, which is actually a really great question. I wish this had been asked before. How do you two deal with the hate that comes your way from trolls? Mine's a 2-part answer, but why don't you start off real quick? Cause I think that's a great question.
Me? I don't know. I feel like I have the bad answer. Cause I feel like my answer isn't healthy. I feel like you should just ignore them. I don't know. I kind of laugh at the trolls. I don't mind them in a way because it's like, what are you doing? Like you're coming onto someone's video and you're like leaving like a horrible negative comment. Like I get like if you didn't agree with my video and you're like, you know what? I really disagree with you. And if you post that, I respect it. Like, yeah, that's what the comment section's for to me. Like, go ahead, give me your opinion. But the minute you're like, this guy's ugly. This guy talks weird. This guy, you know, that stuff. It's just kind of like, who are you? Like who? Like what are you? Like Brad Pitt? Like sitting in front of your computer? Like I'm all successful. I'm Elon Musk. I'm gonna sit in front of my computer, be like, hey, guy, you're ugly. Like, that doesn't happen, right? So I just feel sad for that person in a way. I'm kind of like, what's wrong with this guy? Why is he, what's going on in his life that he feels like so, like, sad?
That's me. For me,
I feel empathy.
I have a couple of, well, so number one, I did a video on this in 2018. It was very early on in my creator journey, but I did do a video about haters and stuff. My thoughts have slightly changed now, having now done this for a while. And I would say that by and large, my current philosophy is for every moment that I spend addressing someone who's a hater, I'm taking away time from someone who's a supporter. And I never want to do that. It's dishonoring the people that are legitimately holding me up and have my back and stuff. So I try as much as I can to just not even feed into the hater. Sometimes it's kind of hard, but I always try to keep that in my mind. For every moment that I spend dealing with a hater, I'm taking one away from someone who's supporting me. And that tends to do me well. All right. So for tech, what are we talking about?
We are going to be talking about Windows 11, taking it to 11. Did you watch the presentation? I got to know.
No, I didn't see it.
I feel like you should watch it. I feel like you need to watch. I don't know. You've seen like Windows presentations before, right? With like Panos Panay.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, so he's like very like passionate when he like talks about this stuff for like Windows all the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know. This year, I just felt like it was like he got like that that real, like, he was usually when you see these presentations from Microsoft, like these hard, they're usually like hardware presentations now ever since Windows 10, like Surface Laptop, Surface Book. Mm-hmm. And when you're talking about like hardware products, you can kind of see like people getting like passionate for it, and it makes a little bit more sense to me. When you're talking like Windows, like the thing that people, I don't like, no knock on Windows. It's a great operating system. Like if you want to play games on PC, like, yeah, Windows is the best. But I don't know if people really get that passionate for Windows. You know what I mean? Like people do not get passionate about a Windows update. And this guy was like, he sounded like he was about to like cry describing like features in Windows 11. I just found it like kind of like funny. I'm like, yeah, man, you're like, these are widgets. You're describing widgets. And you're like, they interconnect with us in a personal way. And like never before during these difficult times, we have brought widgets. And it's like, all right. So, but yeah, Windows 11. I don't know. I think it looks good. Like, I think it looks like a very minor update from Windows 10, which is what it should be. Because in the past, if you look at all of the history of Windows updates, it almost feels like there's a good Windows, like there's Windows XP, and then there's Windows Vista, bad. Mm. There's Windows 7, great. Mm. And then there's Windows 8, you know? Yeah. And then there's Windows 10, which is good. Windows 11 looks like a very minor evolution of Windows, which is exactly what it should be. It changes some things that might take some time getting used to, but it doesn't completely change the game to a point of where if you are going to use this operating system for the first time and you were used to something, it does not look like you're going to be like super frustrated like you were with changes to Vista, like you were to Windows 8. So I think there's always that little bit of worry with Windows updates just based on the history of how they've done it. I feel like this is a much better approach. I like some of the stylistic things I'm seeing with Windows. I like the centered taskbar. They do something clever now where you like, so like with old like Windows 8, Windows 10 stuff, they always had like that tablet mode that like no one ever wanted to use. Everyone wanted the desktop mode. And, you know, when you're using these Windows devices as tablets, it's kind of hard to use that traditional Windows user interface because things are more closely spaced together. They're meant for like mouse control.
Right.
And now with like Windows 11, like, say you're like using like, you're using it in like the keyboard mode and you detach it to bring it up to use as a tablet. Well, it still keeps you in that desktop mode, but then everything on like the bottom and like the top, they like space out a little bit. So to make it easier to like touch it. So I think that's like a really great system to implement that, to like make things like a little bit easier to touch, but still keep the operating system pretty much the same as you had it before. And then they're also doing like smart things where like, say you're like connected to like an external display and you're using like a laptop. You know that moment like when you disconnect from the external display and all your windows go back to like that super small screen. They're not like spaced correctly. Well, now like when you do that, like they'll all like minimize into like a, like into a position and then you can like reset like how you did it. And then like the second you plug back into an external display, it's supposed to remember how you had your layout set up and it will just adjust back to the way you had it.
Okay.
Like lots of little like small clever things like that, that again, not like a huge revolution, but a lot of little small things that when you add them up, you're like, okay, like, you know what? That's actually like a, an improvement that would make my life a little bit easier because I use external displays like my MacBook and like, yeah, the second you like, you got like this big 27 inch display. The second you take it off, it's like, oh no, what? Like the screen's too small to support all that stuff. So I like stuff like that. And, then there was the big focus on gaming. And I think they talked about gaming performance. So supposedly Windows 11 is supposed to be optimized a little bit better for games with what, Direct, was it 12x12 now they're on?
DirectX 12, maybe? I think that's what's going on.
Yes, DirectX 12. And so better gaming performance, which is great, right? Like they spend a lot of time on gaming. And a native optimized app for like Windows for Game Pass, for Xbox Game Pass on Windows. And you know, the last show I was talking about building a gaming PC, and I'm just like thinking now, I'm like, okay, I got an Xbox, I got Game Pass, I build this PC, I get all those games again right on the PC. And the strategy's clicking for me, Travis. I'm like, okay, well, okay.
And Android apps built into Windows. Yes. Like there's some things going on there.
There's a lot. There's
some, which by the way should have happened a while back because with Microsoft not really having a phone anymore and a system anymore, that relationship should have tightened faster. It kind of did with Samsung. So Samsung and Microsoft have been working together closely and integrating things into the Galaxy line of phones for a while now. But this as an Android, like an Android ecosystem thing should have happened long before now. I'm glad that it's happening and it's the right move. And with, you know, Microsoft not having its own kind of phone anymore, not really. I mean, I guess the Duo, but even that is on, you know, Android. So they kind of have to pick a side. They can't pick Apple. So this makes a lot of sense. And I think if you are looking at trying to draw a line where it, previous to this, it was an ecosystem of Apple or a quote freedom of choice on the Android side of things, but really a disjointed experience. You know, you were kind of, you were picking two different types of people. There are people who want everything, and want it to work smoothly like Apple, but with options. And that wasn't exactly what was going on. And I think for me, and Genosis is asking about, do I need to buy an Xbox Series to play on PC or can you just have a PC? Yes, you can. And you can buy, 100%. You do not need, here's the cool thing about, this is why I really love what Microsoft is doing for the gaming. They now have the ability to cloud game on your desktop through a browser and you don't even need an Xbox. You literally could just have Game Pass Ultimate, which will give you PC games and Xbox games that you can play through your browser. Which, of course, any device that has a browser would support that. And I just think Microsoft is doing finally the things they should have been doing all this time. They're bringing all the things together. They're trying to close the gap between them and Apple and then going above and beyond where Apple currently can't go, which is gaming. So they're trying to close the gap in the ecosystem and then adding on top of that a very big chunk, which is gaming, which is super smart, to now make it more of a two-horse race rather than a two-and-a-half-horse race.
Yeah. I think it's definitely a smart move. Again, I did not like the Surface Duo, but if Microsoft has another crack at it, which they totally should do, it was their first time back into like the smartphone business running Android. It's, you know, for a first attempt, chances are it's not going to be good. So,
and it wasn't just a phone, by the way. I mean, they were trying to do something different.
They were trying to do something different, of course, but, that ran Android, you know, and that was like a big deal. Like, wait, Microsoft's going to run Android? So now with Windows 11, seeing Android apps come to Windows, this strategy makes a lot more sense. Like, Microsoft could really offer a compelling package here that could compete with the Apple ecosystem that really another vendor really couldn't. Like, Android was always missing that desktop operating system, you know? Yeah. And people have tried to do it. Samsung tried to do it. Google tried to do it with Chrome OS. Mm-hmm. But Chrome OS really isn't a true like desktop replacement for me. This is the first really crack at it. Putting Android apps on Windows means that like if you get an Android phone, what computer are you going to get? You're probably going to end up getting Windows if all of your Android apps work on it and you can sign into the same things and have that kind of continuity and experience that being in the Apple ecosystem offers. That huge draw for Apple could end up being a huge draw for Windows now.
Yep. Yeah, and it's interesting to see Microsoft kind of, for a while there, I was kind of, I forgotten that Microsoft existed. I mean, short of the Xbox itself, like Windows was just Windows, and you know, you'd hear, it was more like you go to work or you turn, if you have a desktop PC, it was just your operating system. There was nothing else to it. But Microsoft appears to be trying to make itself an actual tech player in the consumer space. They've always been big in cloud and you know, enterprise and stuff. So let's be clear, that's never not been a thing. But the point is, now we're talking about them, and talking about Windows 11 is just a weird thing because to me, like, it doesn't appear to be such a big update, but the fact that they have put in a lot of time and thought into other parts of their business make this a potential tipping point. I mean, I don't know in a way, really. I mean, to be honest, like, Windows still dominates, but I think all the way up until this point, the momentum in my mind, at least for mindshare, was Apple's and not Microsoft's. So I think this kind of at least slows that down somewhat.
Yeah. I think Microsoft's been doing a lot of interesting things these past couple of years. They've come out with some cool products. And again, I say this as like an Apple guy. I don't really use Microsoft products, but there's like stuff I've seen from them, like the Surface Studio, the Surface Book. Like, I think those are interesting products. I thought I got the Duo at the time. I didn't like it, but I really did think that was an interesting product. They had the Surface Neo, which was like a two-screen laptop, which I think they said they're not doing anymore, which I think is a huge mistake. I feel like they should still go forward with it because it was an interesting concept. And I think when that came out, people weren't necessarily hyped for the Duo. They were more hyped for that Neo product. So I'm kind of sad that all the attention was given to the Duo rather than the bigger screen device where I think Microsoft kind of excels. Huh. oh God.
Yeah.
That was good, awful. Good job. So yeah, there's a lot of interesting things. Obviously, you're right though. Like the consumer facing brand, you know, everyone, like a lot of people use Windows way more than Mac OS. But in a way, like the thing you would get excited about from Microsoft was always Xbox. And again, I think one of the reasons why I'm excited when I was watching this Windows 11 is a heavy part of this section was taken up by gaming. And if you know anything about PC gaming, traditionally, Steam is the platform you want to use where you kind of get most of your games. And I feel like that's been kind of waning. A lot of people want more control of the store itself. And Steam, I feel like, has always had like the power. And I feel like over these past couple of years, like EA making their own store, Epic making their own store, it's kind of like taken away power from Steam, from Valve, I should say. And Microsoft bringing Game Pass on there. As I'm looking at all these different things, it's like, could Microsoft compete like selling games again on PC? And before Game Pass, I'd go no, but now with Game Pass, it's like, well, yeah, of course they're gonna they might dominate. You know what I mean? Like it might move all to subscription, and it's like if you want to play on PC, you have to have Game Pass, and that's like that's huge for Microsoft from the gaming perspective, like. They might have the ultimate gaming platform on Windows, which strangely enough, they didn't have before.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see, you know, if any of this moves the needle or if it's just really interesting now because it's kind of new and marketed in a certain way and people are kind of like, okay. And, you know, there's an inevitability to it. This isn't like, oh, the new iPhone comes out and you don't necessarily ever have to upgrade to it. This is Windows. This is the new version of Windows. Support for the existing version is going to end in a couple of years. You pretty much have to move on it if you're already on a version of Windows if you want any type of support. So it's inevitable. Like, it's going to happen. So that is something that really works to their advantage. And we'll see what happens. I think at the end of the day, they've learned a lot. And one of the things I really appreciate by Microsoft in the last like year and a half or so is that it really feels like they've looked at their shortcomings and tried to actually address them thoughtfully. Mostly on the Xbox side of things, but even now when you look at like Windows and stuff, I feel like that appears to be the case. We will see if that's actually the case, but it appears to be the case, and I'm willing to give them the benefit of the doubt for the moment.
Yeah. So now, you know, I feel like we've been talking pretty good about Windows 11, but I got to bring in the bad stuff too, right? It's not all good. It's not all good.
Yeah.
So this is the disadvantage to Windows. To Microsoft strategy, right? You have Apple strategy where they control the hardware and the software. They're the only one making MacBooks or iMacs or whatever. Microsoft is like Android. They sell software to other vendors and they run Windows on their platform. But when you want to do a change like Windows 11, even small changes like this, you might leave out some things in the upgrade path. And I forget the exact devices that weren't supported. But I saw someone mention that even if you bought like a Surface product from 2017, really not that long ago, It will not run Windows 11.
Whoa.
Yes. So they are leaving a lot of PCs out of this upgrade cycle. Windows 10 will be supported for 5 more years, but in a way, you know, PCs last a long time nowadays. It is not a good thing if you bought a product from 2017 and you are not getting software updates. Like for reference, like Apple's going to come out with, you know, the next version of macOS. And I believe that runs on hardware from as old as 2013. So it's quite a difference, right? And there's like a couple different reasons for this. Sarenbyte saying Intel 8th gen and up CPUs will run Windows 11 if that's like the benchmark you want to put it at. But it actually gets a little bit more messy than this. And so to have Windows 11, and I was trying to read up on this, apparently you need something called like a TPM chip, which is like a security chip to like do like encryption and stuff like that. And even if your computer has like all like these like modern CPU specs and all that, if you don't have that TPM chip, Microsoft will not let you run upgrade to Windows 11. Like you need to buy this chip. Apparently it's a chip that you can like upgrade in like desktops and stuff like that. Like you can buy this component. And I was reading on The Verge that like, because you need this chip to upgrade to Windows 11, people are buying this chip and hoarding it. And the price of this chip went up to $100, up $25 more than it retails for in 12 hours since this was announced.
Bruh.
So people are now hoarding the, like, it's awful, right? Like everything, GPUs, motherboard, CPUs, now a literal security chip that like, yeah, okay, my games are going to look better with this graphics card. My system's going to run faster. Now you're messing with people's security too. Like out of all the things you could hoard, it's like, come on.
Yeah, I think Craig in the chat's misunderstanding what you're saying. So, you know, we also have to remember that while this is a tech podcast, not everyone is super technical. And the reality is someone may not want to upgrade an entire processor, which may also include an entire motherboard. They may only want this module, which is built while it is built into 8th gen. You may not want to do all that. Maybe you have a computer that's fine. You don't have the money to upgrade an entire motherboard and processor. Maybe you want to just get the module. And that's what we're referring to, a $75 upgrade versus a multiple $100 upgrade, is I think what Greg is saying. So we just have to be very cognizant that we're not saying that this is the only way to upgrade. If you have a newer 8th gen or, you know, higher CPU, that's fine. But if you don't and your computer still seems to work fine, what we're saying is there is currently a way to get yourself there. But unfortunately, much like everything else has been happening in the tech world for computers, it's being hoarded, which is terrible. It's not a great experience. I mean, the GPU thing, like I said, still boggles my mind to this day that this has been going on for as long as it has. It's crazy. Because again, this really first started when Bitcoin stuff happened, when it really first started happening years ago. It wasn't even like something that just happened the last year. It, you know, a couple of years ago, it was really hard to get a hold of some good GPUs at a decent price. And now it's still going on. So it's a very, which is now affecting, you know, everything really, because the chip shortage for GPUs and the materials needed to be made from GPUs are basically, you're robbing Peter to pay Paul in some aspects. So there's other products that are being affected. It's just weird. We live in a very strange time, and the last 18 months or so has been some of the weirdest times in human history, and we've seen the good and the bad of humans during this time. And I'll tell you, sometimes it feels like a movie, but not a good one.
No, not at all.
Not a good one.
Not at all. But yeah, and I'm sorry if I wasn't clear about that, Craig. Yeah, I just meant like there's a way to upgrade your computers with these things. And as we stated before, the 8th generation CPUs will have this built in. So you won't have to worry about that if you have the 8th generation CPU. But obviously there's people who have these older systems that want to run the latest Windows 11. There's a way to do it. And then the bad side of consumers are like taking advantage of these people. But ultimately the point is like it is always this bad thing with upgrades for operating systems, and you do burn some of your consumer base. You know, I'm not a Windows user. I'm not feeling burned by this, but I read like the comment sections on like these kind of news stories, and there are people who bought like a 7th generation Surface product, and they're mad because you know, they might expect it if they bought a Dell or an HP. But when you're buying it from Microsoft, there's an expectation that your product will be updated for a longer time, and it's not happening.
Yeah. It's interesting that in this aspect of it, they have taken a completely opposite direction of Apple, where Apple is supporting very, very old products versus the other way around. But we'll see. I mean, listen, at the end of the day, it might not matter because if they're already a couple of years in, so let's say you bought it in 2017, we're 4 years in, you still got another 5 years, that's 9 years. At that point, you probably should upgrade. I mean, that's fair.
Maybe. Like, I don't know. Computers last a long time nowadays. Like, my family had like a 2007 Mac still running just fine. And it's like, computers lasted long back then. Like, I don't know. Like, realistically, what kind of advancements are going to be made in the next 10 years where it would render that kind of computer obsolete? Like, at today's stage with all, like, this power and stuff. And I get it. You're right. Like, at the end of 10, like, as long as you're supporting Windows 10 for 5 years, it's kind of less of a complaint. But the expectation has shifted a lot because you bought this product when it was on Windows 10.
Yeah.
So, you know, Apple and Android have changed the way people think about updates now to the point where you buy an iPhone or even like the latest Android phones, like you're at least getting three different updates with it. With this switch to Windows 10 to Windows 11, that computer didn't even survive one update. Not like three.
Crazy.
Like it didn't get one update to Windows 11. And I get it's because of the security issue, and maybe that's for the best, but you know, consumers are going to be burned by this. Like in 2017, you might think that they knew this strategy was coming, but I don't know. It seems kind of like
It's very interesting that, I think to your point, the biggest damning thing of this is that it was by Microsoft rather than some third party vendor like Dell or something. I think that definitely, you know, holds some water there.
It's always hard because like, me and you, and I'm sure a lot of people watching, you know, listening to this podcast or watching our videos, like, oh, they have to upgrade in 9 years. Like, who cares? Like, oh, like whatever. But I am empathetic because I know those types of people that aren't that into tech, and they buy this laptop or they buy this Surface product. Like, I think like the Surface Studio, one of them isn't going to be able to upgrade to this, right? That's like a $3,500 product. So there are people who spend a lot of money on these things. And even if they don't need the update, if they're going to be fine for the next 9 years, the fact that they can't do it, and it was just 4 years ago that they spent a lot of money on this product, that's going to burn them ultimately. Like whether it's right or wrong, they feel burned by that. And I get that. I get that.
Yeah. And by the way, like if you're just coming into the live stream now, obviously we listen to the podcast, you heard the whole thing, but we've given, I think, the pros and the cons of Windows. I think we've been very fair with it, but we'd love to hear what you have to say. Of course, you can leave us a voicemail. There's a link in the show notes, link in the description below for that. Subscribing to us on all the audio podcast platforms. You can also email us, as long as Greg remembers to check the email before the show. And we'll definitely talk to you guys and gals about whatever you have to say. I would love to hear what you guys and gals think about Windows. And if you're going to use it, if you're going to upgrade right away, you're going to wait. I think a lot of people wait for the first service pack before they upgrade. I will probably do something similar. But really interested to see what the community has to say about that. And this episode, as we talked about some personal things earlier in the show. So we hope that you really liked that and appreciated that.
Yes. Thank you.
So I guess we'll do this again next week. If you're here.
For, I guess.
I mean, who knows? For the people here on the live stream on YouTube, of course, we'll do a little bit of maybe Q&A here on Aftercast. But for everyone else who's listening to the audio podcast, hey, don't forget to rate us on Apple Podcasts. It makes a huge difference. We thank you so much for joining us. He's Greg. I'm Travis. And this is GadgetCast.